And we are back with episode 840 of The Critical Myth. I'm John, your host, and tonight we have...
This is Gary from Jacksonville. And John, even though we took a break, some of these shows didn't. They're backing up on us over here.
Just a little bit, but of course that's because we have 3 weeks worth of content for some of these shows, which means that, we have actually a lot of material that we have been able to take a look at and decide whether or not it was really passing our muster, I guess you could say. Let's find out if they did. So we're going to go ahead and get started on that episodic discussion. But before we do that, Gary, if you don't mind giving a bit of a disclaimer.
Oh, yes, absolutely. We already hope you've seen these shows, especially since they've been out for a few weeks now. But if you haven't, as we discuss them, we will not avoid any topics of discussion. That includes who lives, who dies, and who saved the day. So feel free to listen and enjoy our insight, because we won't hold back at all. So we will spoil it all.
That's right. Now, just one minor detail, because I think that some people are wondering and how we're going to handle this. We're going to consider the Crisis on Earth X shows, that crossover, to be almost a separate entity from the actual shows. This way we can talk about the crossover as a separate entity and without having to worry about, which part are we talking about and all that. So we'll talk about the DCW shows kind of on their own, leading into the crossover, and then the crossover separately. Just makes more sense that way. So, yeah, when we bring up, for instance, Arrow in a little bit, we're only talking about the pre-crossover episodes. Okay, so hopefully that sounds fair to everybody. So what we're going to do, as we have been doing for the last little bit now, is kind of do it night by night. So starting with Wednesdays, we have the first show on the list here is actually Riverdale. Now, Gary, you're not watching that right now.
No.
Okay. So I will say, though, that I think that the second season is better than the first. I'm enjoying it a lot more. It seems to be definitely exponentially increasing the absurdity and craziness and darkening up a little bit even more than it was in the first season, but it works now that they've established things. And I've been giving it eights across the board so far for the last few weeks. And yeah, it's getting even more complicated and messy, which is great. That's exactly the way it should be, in my opinion. So kudos to Riverdale. Also on Wednesday nights is Mr. Robot. And that show is also really bringing it this season. I think it's a return to form after a second season that divided a lot of fans. There was a huge plot twist in the form of a major terrorist attack that took place, and the implication that Elliot's involvement, maybe, because you never know if he's actually in control of his own senses, but it has been a really strong season. And in fact, Edmund has also given his scores on Mr. Robot, and he gives it nines so far, the last three episodes that were during this period. So I have to say, if you kind of were out there in the audience, if you were thinking to yourself, the second season of Mr. Robot was really kind of disappointing compared to the first, I don't know if I want to watch it. Actually, the third season is really good. It seems like it bounced back big time from the from some of those complications of the second season. Moving into third season, still wrapping my head around that. But I do have to say that despite the fact that it probably has about $5 in a candy bar on its budget, it's still managing, from a storytelling point of view, to throw in some very interesting twists. And I've been giving it eights the last few weeks. It's still trying to maintain its quality. I do feel like the show is kind of on its last legs at this point, because they can only make the money stretch so far. And I will be curious to see if this manages to make it to season 14 or 15. At this point, it really is long in the tooth, and it feels like it's kind of running out of things to do. But even so, the episodes themselves are actually pretty solid. And it's very clear that the cast is able to still engage and bring it week to week. Now, that brings us to, as I said, the pre-crossover episodes of Arrow. And actually, there were three episodes before the crossover. There was Deathstroke Returns and Promises Kept, which was the much-anticipated Deathstroke two-parter, followed up by Thanksgiving. And let's see here. I don't see that, Gary, you put all those in, but I'm sure that you watched all of them.
No, actually, I haven't. I don't know why. really don't. I stopped right at there, and I have not actually seen it for the last few weeks. So it wasn't even a conscious oversight. Like I said, I don't want to watch it anymore. It just slipped through the cracks. I will catch up before the holidays, though.
Oh, well, yeah.
But I realize you have more invested in this than I do.
Well, it was Deathstroke, after all.
That's what I guess. My thought exactly.
Yes, and it's family viewing at this point. So, yeah, I will say that the Deathstroke two-parter was a little surprisingly, I don't want to say weak, but it was not as strong and as over-the-top fun as I was hoping it would be. But Thanksgiving was a good, solid episode. There's a lot of threats coming Oliver's way, and I really feel like this is another show that has reinvigorated itself, much like Mr. Robot. I feel like Arrow has bounced back. The fifth season was really good, but season six has been better than that overall, in my opinion. And of course, you know, at this point, you're kind of caught up with the crossover, with everything
yes.
you really need to know. So we'll get to that
yes.
soon enough. Yeah. Yes. So, okay. Let's see. Beyond that, then, on Thursday nights, we have a show that I know that you are absolutely up to date on, and that would be The Orville. So there were two
yes.
episodes that aired in this period. One was Cupid's Dagger, and then the other one was Firestorm. So, Gary, why don't you tell me a little bit about your thoughts on The Orville, because you've given it some pretty high scores here.
Yeah, I'm really thrilled with it. I think they're doing a great job. Now, this one is really sort of the follow-up to the pilot, I guess, where, you know, we meet the person who broke up Ed and Kelly in the first place. And now we're left with a sort of question as to why it happened. It wasn't just, you know, we think now that there might be something else involved, possibly. At least it seems that way as a result of the show, which puts a whole nother twist on everything at this point, especially with Kelly's remorse and regret over it. I thought they really handled it definitely with their own flavor, where it was sort of tongue-in-cheek. But when Ed starts getting interested in Kelly's ex, that's where it does go off the rails just a little bit, I'll admit. But at the same time, I think it makes a much stronger case for Kelly's dalliances than we were ever given depth of before. So it puts her in a different light for me. And I think it changes some of the tone of their relationship, I think, as a result of it, even if it did get slightly rockier during the course of the episode. So I thought it was really well done, both as a follow-up and more of a background piece, I guess. We've continued to get parts of the background of Ed and Kelly's story for a few episodes now, and this, again, is another one that adds to it. So it's fun. I won't be surprised when they end up back together again, because I think that's where they're running the show in the first place. But this definitely, I think, makes a stronger case for that to happen.
Yeah, I was really quite surprised by this episode, too, and not the least by the fact that Rob Lowe played the the other character, which they have had some really great guest stars, haven't they? But it did change things quite a bit, because now, instead of the recriminations that you would expect, it's changed the game. And I think that actually, in retrospect, does a lot to change the impression of how those early episodes played out. I think that it was a pretty smart move to throw that twist in there. So, yeah, I thought that was a solid episode, just as you did. It seems like Firestorm was an even better episode from your perspective.
Oh, I thought so, too. It was very much I guess you could call it this, although I don't often use this term. It was a very dark episode for Orville to put out, honestly. Of course, you know, Next Generation has done this a few different ways, but their way of doing it was good, slightly less fulfilling at the end, but at the same time, it fit in very well regardless. It made sense. This whole thing where basically everyone's getting killed or dying from a horrible nightmare, and it was I really liked it. I think it was a challenge for her with this brooding sort of insecurity, because she advanced through the ranks too fast. And she constantly questions whether she should be in looks. And she's put to the task literally, and was not found wanting. So definitely a whole hero's journey completed and successfully. So I felt that's nice. I really don't feel I learned that much about Alara, because honestly, I felt that she always had that strength anyway. Even if she questioned herself, I never doubted that she would accomplish things. So I can't say it revealed a lot of her, but at the same time, it was satisfying to have it confirmed, I guess would be the best way to put it.
Yeah, but to me, what was really surprising here is that this was such a, as you said, a familiar story that would have fit in any version of Star Trek. That
Voyager did with A Year in Hell. Yeah. It's definitely been in a few different ones.
I even think just the twist of that this was the character's way of dealing with a little bit of post-traumatic stress and working through some things, that I thought was more the classic Trek type of episode where, okay, you've got this relatively minor character in the ensemble and we're going to give them an episode that's about their personal hang-ups and issues and working through them. And I really was quite thankful that they went that way, because again, this is showing a maturity in this show as it evolves that is overshadowing any type of juvenile sense of humor that you may want to brand it with. And actually, I have to say, I don't know about you, Gary, maybe asking what your opinion is, but I really feel like McFarlane and the writers are getting smarter about the comedy. It's not nearly as in your face as the first few episodes, at least to me.
What do you think? I wholeheartedly agree with you. I think they're actually breaking sort of out of their mold a little bit, and they realize that that their level of humor for this show has to be different. It might have been okay for a movie or an episode, but to go anywhere near the long haul, respectfully, they have to adjust their comedy. You know, they were often chided because there was the slapstick and, you know, sexual jokes were so over the top the first one or two episodes. And I think they've heard that and they've tamed it down substantially. Not enough to not say it's still a Seth MacFarlane project, but at the same time, I think they are aware that the bulk of their audience doesn't want that. At least not to that level, and they've adjusted to it.
Do you think that part of it is that, number one, they were successful, which I don't know that they were expecting how much success they actually had, but I'm wondering if then they saw Discovery and said, we actually aren't going to be competing with Star Trek Discovery, but rather complementing it, and we have an opportunity here to appeal to an even larger and broader base than we expected. Because maybe they thought that they were going to be up against a traditional Star Trek show more than they actually are. And I wonder how much that played into it.
I would agree. And not only that, but they've found that I think that they could move more towards that traditional show, that they don't have to be so opposing to it. I agree. Yeah. That they can fall into, for lack of a better term, they'll fall into the Star Trek mold, and they don't have to be as edgy or as jokey or as off color with their humor because they have to differentiate themselves. Like you're saying, they can actually slink back. I don't want to say a clone, maybe a homage. Yeah. That's fair. More of an homage than they originally thought they'd ever be able to get away with.
Yeah. And I'm glad that they are. I mean, I am quite thankful that both shows get to coexist into a second season. Mm. I think that it actually frees both of them up to be more of what they are. I mean, without being tentative about it, just go ahead, run with the ball. And you're really reflecting two completely different sides of the thought process, even if they're not both Star Trek shows, right? But it is almost that sense of, that dichotomy between Next Gen and Deep Space Nine, even. Maybe a little more extreme on both sides, but you are getting two flavors of, quote-unquote, Trek-esque shows. Even though Discovery is officially a Trek show, I still feel like in some respects...
I was going to raise that point, but since you did it for me, I believe it.
Yeah, although we will talk about that a little bit, because that we do cover the fall finale for Discovery.
But yeah, but just to sum up,
period here.
They're doing very well and getting better.
I'm actually sad that the season's ending soon. I mean, that's something to be said right there.
I won't disagree with you that I do want to see more of it. At the same time, it feels to me like they're still trying to get a hold on this, and with their having to change their writing style. I think if we were immediately jammed with a full season, I think they might run short. So I'm happy that they have a chance to go back, see what they've been doing well, take in more more viewer suggestions and critiques and move forward with it. So I'm happy. I'm sad there's not more of a season, but I think it's going to give them a chance to do an even better second season.
Yeah. You know, it may be a matter of, we have said before that we are in an era where less is more. So this may be a good case for that. You're right. Where, you know what, these episodes that they have are really just to whet your appetite for the second season. It doesn't need to be more than 10 or 13 anymore. We see a lot of shows that way, actually. I would have once said it's horrible because, wow, I really want there to be longer seasons, but frankly, not everyone needs to be a 20-plus episode season anymore. I think it actually hurts sometimes more than it helps these days. But mm-hmm. We've talked about that quite a lot. All right, so we've talked about the Orville. Let's see what is next on the list. Okay, so going to Friday nights, we have a couple shows here. We have The Exorcist, which had a couple episodes here. I think that it have just two. Yes, it did. Boy, is that season picking up. The second season has been really good. I really like the fact that a lot of the threads over the season are coming together. And again, this is another example of what I was just talking about. It's a 10-episode season, so the story is very concise. And there's not a lot of filler in these episodes, and I really enjoy that fact. And boy, there are some really nice psychological horror notes in this show. A lot less jump scares and a lot more of the kind of deeply disturbing situations type of material. Less successful, and a show that I'm actually kind of glad that at least it ended on an average note, but I'm really not expecting or looking forward to more of, is The Inhumans. Gary, I don't know if you ever went back to this one.
No, I didn't.
The 8 episodes of Inhumans were longer than it needed to be. It was extremely predictable. It kind of ended on exactly the note that one would expect. But at the same time, I really don't know how they're going to integrate this into the larger cinematic universe at this point. It really doesn't mesh well with where Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is going to go. And I think that it was an experiment. But really, the biggest takeaway from this is that the executive producer and showrunner that was in charge of this and the first season of Iron Fist needs to go do something else. Maybe a reality show on a local cable network. Just thinking.
That could have. Okay.
Yeah, this could have been so much better. But again, I think that it was a problem with the tone. I definitely get the sense that he wanted it to be seen and visually and character-wise and plot-wise like a classic Kirby type of production, but I don't think he went far enough with it. I think he still tried to keep a sense of seriousness to it, which is the same problem that Iron Fist had when it was until it could find its feet, it was constantly giving you all these different looks, and it was not consistent. Same thing here. It was like, if you just stayed goofy and made it very clear that the aesthetic was this Kirby over-the-top type of material and type of presentation, I think they would have done much better. But alas, it was not a good show. I think, unfortunately, it was at best on the same level as Legends of Tomorrow. All right, well, that brings us to another show here that I promised we would talk about, and that is Star Trek Discovery.
Yes.
So, Gary, what did you think of the fall finale? Into the Forest I Go, as it was called.
It was very fast-paced, lots of stress, for lack of a better term. In some ways, it reminded me, and I don't want to say too strong, but it reminded me of 33 a little bit from Battlestar Galactica, where it was just going almost nonstop. Action just kept happening. You had very little downtime at all through most of the show, at least for me. The engineer pushing himself so hard, all those jumps, geez. They've been showing over the episodes how wiped out he is from even a handful, more or less. How many were they? 120 something, or 133?
Oh, quite a few. Yeah, I don't remember the exact number, but it was far more than anyone wanted to see him try to handle.
That
was incredibly effective.
Yeah, that was very built the tension extremely well. That was interesting. We had the Admiral come back and all the implications that go along with that. Then we had the episode did have other strong points, but the ending of it where they jump into we don't know where. Mm-hmm. I've seen a lot of stuff online where people have caught screen captures of his screen showing that he did some sort of override or something like that. I'm like, wow, geez, I am not watching this to that detail level, but some people obviously are. So they're definitely working hard to put in little details for fans to catch and speculate on, till next season. And overall, I have to agree with something you said earlier. I don't feel that this really falls into any of the previous Star Trek molds we have. It's probably the most different show to fall under that banner of Star Trek that we've ever had. And I'll say I enjoy it. I don't, honestly, if it never said Star Trek on it, I would be just as fine with this show. Possibly even better because of my expectations.
I think you're right as far as that's concerned. I think that on its own merits, it's a strong show. But I think where it sometimes runs into problems is trying to fit itself into the Star Trek mold.
Yes.
And into the continuity. I know there are some people that completely disagree with that. I would love to hear from them, actually, because I think it would be an interesting debate. And I'd like to hear other people's thoughts on how it fits. But I even know some really, like, not even just us, but long-standing fans of Trek and, like, uber fans of Trek that struggle with where this fits. I have a feeling that's actually going to be addressed sooner or later.
Yeah, I've heard those teasings as well. And honestly, I realize that a lot of people want that to happen, to explain the uniforms, to explain the ship design, to explain a whole bunch of stuff. But, I wish the show would just go forward.
Hmm.
You know, I don't need the fan service, I guess, is what I'm going to say. I think they're standing well on their own to start pulling themselves, let me rephrase that, dragging themselves to, you know, forcibly fit within the Star Trek universe. I don't need it. I wish they just keep moving forward. I don't want them to waste screen time explaining to me why the Constitution class is the more advanced ship.
You know what? This is where maybe I now agree far more with their decision to say that the continuity implications will be covered in the comics and the novels. Because I think you're right. I think the show needs to focus on being its own entity. And I really want to see where that goes. This episode, to me, really was a leap forward. Even though I didn't give it, you know, full marks or as close to full marks as you did, I think I gave it, I gave it an 8.5, you gave it a 9.
Yeah.
Not a big deal of difference.
No.
But what held me back a little bit was the fact that it was blatant that something was going to go wrong with Stamets and on the whole Spore drive. I think they really laid that on thick.
Oh, yeah, just one more. Oh,
yeah, just one more. It's going to be fun. Oh, boy.
I saw the neon sign blinking, and I wasn't...
Yep.
They don't even have neon anymore.
And that was the only thing that held this back to me was things like that. But the fact that the story is now shifting from the conflict with the Klingons, for a while at least, to the implications and consequences of what they did to get to this point. You know, what's going to happen with this place that they've kind of found themselves in? What's it going to do to Stamets? What's going to happen with, what's his name? Oh, I can't remember off the top of my head now. Tyler, that's him.
Yes.
The one who has some clear issues and traumas with the Klingon woman that they now have. What's going to happen with the Admiral? Because in a certain sense, Lorca left her kind of high and dry. All these things that happened in the first half of the season are actually going to come to roost. And that's a far more interesting story to me. Because it's what was kind of implied and promised to begin with. And we've always said that the biggest imperfection of the show is the lack of depth in some of the character exploration. Well, it looks like they're going to go in that direction more and more. And I hope that that's what they intend, because when they showed for the rest of the season of Discovery, it was a lot of character stuff. So I was really crossing my fingers at the end. I was very pleased with the amount of momentum that they gave that story. And I was kind of shocked that a big chunk of the Klingon conflict came to such a quick close, because it actually makes more sense out of why it was kind of a... While it did kick off the enmity between the Klingons and the Federation and Starfleet, it explains why it didn't explode into something that was even more horrible, because it was a relatively short war.
Or also why we didn't see more of that aspect in any of the other shows or anything like that.
Right, because a decade or two later, it would kind of turn into that Cold War that we are used to. I can buy that. I can buy that. I'm far more interested now in seeing how they flesh out the characters even more. So there is that. At least Discovery has managed to really get its hooks in. I know that there is another novel coming when the show resumes in January, and I'm looking forward to that for sure. I want to see more about Lorca. I want to see more about these characters. It took a little while, but I think it finally got under my skin, and now I want to see more. All right. Any other thoughts on Discovery?
You know, as much as they say Michael Burnham was the main character, it really feels like Lorca's taken the front stage. Mm. I don't know if that was intentional, whether it was just something that naturally evolved out of the writing, that sometimes, you know, characters do start to tell their own story to some extent while the writers are putting this all together, and he just had the stronger narrative, or maybe they'll go screening back. But as I think of all the promo introductions, how they're saying how the show is going to be focused on, you know, she's the focus, I'm not feeling that. Are you?
Not really. Even though there was a big chunk of this episode that was all about her kind of finishing what she started, so to speak. It really still felt like Lorca and Stamets and Tyler are much more prominent characters right now.
Yes.
Okay. So, moving then on to The Walking Dead. Three episodes here. Episode 8.4, which would be Some Guy. The fifth episode, which was The Big Scary You. And then the sixth episode, The King, The Widow, and Rick. So basically the first episode was a big episode for King Ezekiel, where things went very badly. The Big Scary You was a big Negan episode between him and Father Gabriel. And then the third episode was really more of a, I liked it far less than you did, I think.
Prologue,
it was kind of all over the map. But what are your thoughts so far of this season of The Walking Dead?
Well, honestly, as you know, as arc-rific as this show is, these three episodes to me seem really tight together, tighter than perhaps some of the episodes normally are. It really felt like they were trying to write almost a continuous narrative, even though we were flashing back and forth between people. It all seemed to happen real time, all together, pretty tight for me. I thought as you said, the King Ezekiel stuff was very strong. I think we all knew that boasting "no one will fall" was very prophetic.
Very bad idea.
Yeah, and virtually everyone fell. So I mean, and as I assumed they would, as he said it for the third time. Mm-hmm. So they were driving that point home a little too hard, or at least a little obvious for me. But it was, you know, it's interesting to see, even when they feel that they have the upper hand, you know, things can turn in a heartbeat, whether it's a zombie horde coming through, or, you know, running out of food, or, you know, or who knows what, you know, what else, or someone getting ill and not being able to save them. So it's, you know, this is a rough, cruel world. And I think as much as as zombies have sort of, to a large extent, become less of the focus of this series, again, it focuses back really on the human condition. It focuses on, you know, people's doubts and fears and misgivings, and they hold up a mirror to these characters, and they do it well. Some people, you know, come through and grin and bear it, like Carol. Other people get broken along the way, I think, like Ezekiel did. And other people maintain the faith all along, no pun intended, like Jesus. And I think they're doing a good job of showing a whole bunch of different human perspectives on situations. And they're doing it without discrediting any of them, which is a nice thing to do. They're not mocking, they're not even putting down. They're just, you know, presenting them as is and sort of letting us make the value judgment, which is nice.
Yeah, I mean, with Ezekiel, definitely. What did you think of The Big Scary You, the Negan episode?
Let's see, that was sort of the middle one.
There was an attempt to humanize him, so I'm curious as to whether or not you feel that it was effective or
persuasive. It was all right. It's for this season, it's probably the lowest grade I've given it, or one of the lowest. It didn't strike me as using him very well. It felt like filler. Oh gosh, we got to show something to him because he's popular. So let's come up with some way to give him time. And that's about what it came to for me.
I still maintain the biggest problem with Negan as a villain, and it was the same thing with the source material, is that the more you see of him, the more you notice that he has to water down his rules in order to justify not killing most of the quote-unquote heroes almost immediately. There is no reason why Father Gabriel should have survived at this point. what I was expecting Negan to do, which he would have done if he was being consistent with the way he was introduced, is that he would have used Gabriel to survive and then immediately beat his head in. The fact that he didn't do that seemed not particularly well explained.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm sure that some of the intrigue of what happened at Sanctuary is going to come into play in future episodes, but at the same time, it did feel like, as much as this was the most three-dimensional episode we've seen for Negan in a long time, it still didn't resolve that problem of how he's being portrayed. And again, I think it goes back to the source material. They're doing the best they can with it, but the source material did the same thing. It watered him down over time.
Well, it sort of has to, really, because from what he was presented as to what you can actually, you know, he was very much a caricature early on, you know, very gruff and lay down the law without any consideration or value. It's just boom, bam, done.
Yeah.
And to actually have to work with people and discuss things, it really wasn't what the guy was. So it's they did have to change him. And you can agree or disagree. I typically think I would have rather seen him go out, stay strong and go out for some reason or disappear than hang around and compromise as much. It seems to be he's not an insult, but it doesn't ring true to the character. So
no, it really doesn't. And I'll also say this. Compare the way that they adapted the governor in the third and fourth season versus how they've adapted Negan. I feel like they did a much better job with the governor, because even though they expanded dramatically on what was actually on the page, they made him more disturbing and scary because of that. Although he still also overstayed his welcome a bit. I think that Negan needed to be revised from the source material far more in order to keep him, as you say, that really strong villain. How well that would have worked, I'm not entirely clear, but at least I think it would have worked better than what they're doing now. And how about the third episode? Because that one I really had a problem with, and in fact, I really didn't even have any desire to review it, which is, you know, I usually try to review every episode of the series, and this just felt like nothing happened. But you seem to have liked it better, so...
Well, I did. I enjoy seeing Maggie sort of flex her leadership and put her foot down, and at the same time she was she's not letting him just wander around aimlessly, but she's not going to be inhuman either. She's trying to build the future, and obviously some people don't agree with her, but at the same time she's trying at least. I think she has hope that things can. Not that they ever get back, but things can still be better. That maybe we can save some of these people. We don't just have to slaughter everyone. The world. I think she's really our optimist of the group. She may be pragmatic, but at the same time, I think she just still always she's hopes, and this is an example of it, in my opinion, that she's not trying to kill these people. She's bringing them in. We're seeing that some of the people aren't very reputable, and they probably do deserve to be killed. But she's trying, and. It's in this world, it's probably going to turn out to be naivete, and something bad will happen as a result. But we can always hope that something good comes out of this, because people are starting to get scarcer and scarcer in this world, and I think they need every hand they can. And we'll see. But I think they've dealt a strong blow to the Saviors. I can't imagine them coming back in anywhere strength that they previously enjoyed. So. Regardless of surprise heavy weapons fire and stuff like that, their days are definitely numbered, and I think they should be smart enough to realize that.
Yeah, you would think. I don't know. To me, it just felt like a lot of moving pieces on the board, and I still have this feeling like we really don't understand what Rick's plan is. It would be a lot easier to swallow some of what's going on at the various locations if we did have a sense of the big picture, or a better sense. That's just kind of the way this is leaving me a little bit cold. But maybe as it comes to the middle of the season, it'll kind of come back together. And I'll say part of it, too, is that I felt like the whole subplot with Carl was just going nowhere. At least nowhere good. I have a feeling that they don't know what to do with him. And that doesn't bode well for anybody on this show, anyway.
Yeah, but I don't think the character himself will be going anywhere. I'm not expecting any surprises on that one. So.
Yeah, but I hope they find something better for him to do in the meantime.
Well, you know, maybe they are laying the seeds. If you think about how Rick Dussett didn't want him to do any of this, and he's insisting to do it anyway, it might introduce conflict at some point.
So. All right, so let's see. We're kind of wrapping up some of these. Let's go ahead and talk about the mid-season finale of Star Wars Rebels. You gave it a pretty high grade on this one.
Oh, I don't know what they can do to make me give a bad score to it at this point. I'll admit that I don't know if prejudicial is the right word, but I'm just really enjoying this, especially as I'm somewhat hip deep in the novels of the universe and stuff like that. I'm really enjoying this. I probably should have given it a little bit lower than I gave, especially the first one. But at the same time, I think they're doing everything right, and I'm hard pressed to say what they need to do different to make it better.
Well, they're on their kind of victory lap season now, right? Because
they were told going into thankfully or not thankfully, they were told going into this season that this is it. So, they've had they were able to plot out the whole year to an ending. So whether it'll end up at A New Hope or at a Rogue One or maybe some other point, we'll have to see. But I have utter faith in them that while I will be sad to see it go, they will end it well.
And I still say, and I know that we kind of debated this last time, but looking at this episode especially, I have a feeling that Kanan is not going to make it through this.
They already blinded the guy. What more do you want from him?
All that he can give.
Yes. I agree.
Come on, you have to see where they're going with this.
in many episodes, especially now that he and Hera are an item. Yeah, it's... Yeah, that was pretty much the death knell for me when I finally accepted that fact. But they've set him up as a martyr character from the beginning. So if that should come to fruition, I won't say I'll be shocked. I'll be saddened, but I won't be shocked.
Well, again, why would a prominent Jedi involved with the Rebel Alliance not be around to help Luke? Something has to happen. That's just, the timing being what it is.
Yeah.
And the fact that they are really heavily foreshadowing his fall. So,
well, you like to say I won't doubt they're foreshadowing his fall, but if you want to go from the Luke perspective, by the time he's not on Yavin 4 for a day before he ends up hopping into the X-wing, and then pretty much right after that he goes off the Dagobah.
They move around a little between then, but I get your point.
I don't know that they had time for. Oh, geez, this guy needs more Jedi training. Where's that Kanan guy? I don't know that they had time for that.
Well, no, I think it's more just the fact that it's an established point that Force users in general are scarce.
Yeah.
And, someone that was prominent, you would have expected him to even show up in Rogue One if he was still around.
I agree. So, having a trained a fully trained Jedi Knight around would definitely be a plot line that sort of would get in the way of the Luke myth, yes.
Mm-hmm. All right. So, actually, one last thing before we move on to the next episode. I just want to kind of check in on The Gifted, which I still say is a show that is not getting nearly enough attention as it came into its kind of quote-unquote holiday break, I guess, for the Thanksgiving holiday here in the U.S. But the episodes 7 and 8 of its first season, Extreme Measures and Threat of Extinction, finally got into some of the background of the lead characters, and I was really happy with what they did. I was always wondering why they would use the name Strucker for the main family when there is such a history in the Marvel universe of that name, and they actually explained it. So I was quite happy with the way that they went with that, and I'm looking forward to the rest of this first season. I think that it is right now, it's one of those shows that not enough people are talking about. I think people forget it's there, but I think that it's actually a better representation of the X universe than some of the films lately have been. I think it actually pulls it off better than Apocalypse did in some respects.
Hmm.
So yeah, that would be one to catch up on over the holidays if you get a chance, Gary. But, all right, what we're going to do is go ahead and leave this episode here. And when we come back next time, it's going to be heavy into the DCW as we talk about Crisis on Earth X. So.
Ooh.
And so ends another epic episode of The Critical Myth. If you want to leave a comment for this show, head over to vognetwork.com. Not only can you find links to the podcast version of each show, but there is a dedicated forum, a ton of written reviews, and related articles by the crew throughout the site. For the written reviews, you can even leave your own review, so let us know if you agree or not. You can also leave comments on our Facebook page, Critical Myth, on Twitter at Critical Myth, or Google Plus, under The Critical Myth Show. Any and all use of copyrighted material is only intended for discussion, commentary, parody, or educational purposes, in accordance with U.S. Code Title 17, also known as fair use. In other words, please don't sue us. And of course, the statements and opinions of the Critical Myth crew are not necessarily those of the VOG network, its partners, or affiliates, but let's face it, we're probably right anyway. Until next time, watch, read, and listen, and believe in the critical myth.